I thought that was an important event because it made a closer in this team. I'm trying to think of some new things. I'm waiting for a clue, a cue to motivate my memory. Some of the personalities, I thought that some of the basic concepts and feasibility determination prior to my coming out of the program became evident that that a lot of very good, solid thinking had been done early. Particularly when we got to the lightweight stage. This was F24 through F210. Apparently they'd been asked to reduce the weight of the stage in order to enhance the ability to carry larger payloads, higher weight payloads. And
how was this weight reduction achieved? In other words, the first three vehicles plus T were heavier?
That's right. And I don't recall the weight. We also made another significant weight reduction when we changed from a honeycomb helium purged insulation on the outside of the LH2 tank to a spray foam technique, which provided us with better insulation and a substantial weight reduction. So there was the structural weight reduction and then the insulation weight reduction.
What the percentages can you attribute to, the reduction can you attribute to the to these two parts, the two areas? Half of it was insulation?
Well, it was done in, see, there were actually three steps. One was two steps, I guess. One was the weight reduction, which was predominantly a weight reduction in the structure, but did include some weight reduction in other systems, like the instrumentation was reduced from a R&D type of instrumentation to a operational type instrumentation. And the insulation came in increments. And I don't recall a specific stage. It might have been S28 when we finally achieved the complete change on the insulation to the lightweight insulation. Percentage-wise, I could give you some numbers, but I'm afraid they're way off. I just assume I'd even
probably check this out later. This is things I'm looking for in the triple. I think to get some leads of what is important. And I want to develop maybe the insulation stories.
Now the insulation.
And kind of build this up as a K50. So maybe I'll say a half a dozen technical things about.
See, that's why I think this matrix that I referred to earlier. You definitely ought to get your hands on it because that would have all of these things on it.
Maybe it'd be wise to talk about the two failures that we had, the one at Steel Beach and the other one down at Mississippi. To give another little aspect, several people have mentioned it.
Hey, you're referring to the nozzle?
No, I'm talking about
the
pneumatic test failure when they had the water in it at Steel Beach.
Well, that was prior to my time. I went over and looked at the pile of what was left, but that's about all I can.
How did that
happen?
Anyway, we're aware that the test went up to.
We met the requirements, the structural requirements. Now, that was on the. That test qualified the so called heavyweight structure. We had another series of major test articles, structural test articles, that we called the mini stages. And they were called mini stages A, B, and C. And C was essentially the thrust structure, you know, the support of the engine. And B was the oxygen tank. Now, the A and C structures were tested at Huntsville, and the B structure was tested at Santa Susana. Now, the B structure was demolished during testing. And that occurred just prior to the launch of one of our stages. And I recall I was out of town, and the immediate reaction was we had to prove that the failure that occurred there either did or didn't have an impact on the stage to be launched, because we wouldn't launch it if it didn't have that implication. And we cleared the stage that was on the pad as not being related to that failure, and were able to proceed with launch on schedule. That was a rather hectic few days.
Remember what mission it was?
My recollection, it was late in the year, like in December.
69?
Probably. 69. I think that's right.
So that would have been, I mixed up too now. When was the lunar landing? That was 69.
That was July 69.
Oh, that was
11.
12 then was November.
Yeah, Apollo 12.
Yeah.
Well, one other comment, if we could, Rick. Did you say something about your relationship with Von Braun and some of the people in Huntsville, the land directors, and things on the project?
Well, let's see.
Von Braun came out for his inspection trip and whatever dealings you had when you went to Huntsville?
Well, my primary relationship with Von Braun was when I presented briefings for what we called the flight readiness sequence. In other words, that we had briefings in which we had to show ourselves, as well as the management council at Huntsville and the stage managers there, that we were indeed ready. And we'd go through a sequence at Huntsville, and then finally the sequence for us, the contractor, would end at the Cape, where a presentation would be made there. Mm-hmm. And that was to develop the data, testing, logic, rationale that said we were ready. And usually we would say we're ready with a few exceptions, mm-hmm. and identify that we did have these plans to take care of the exceptions, and that whole thing would be assessed by a large room full of experts, and they would either agree with you or disagree, and if they disagreed, the challenge would have to be met. If not, you had to go back to the showers. then there would be, that was the sequence. Then here at in Southern California, we would present briefings to Von Braun, and on special either program status or in some instances special briefings. That reminded me of another subject called POGO. We identified that we had a POGO problem once we I thought that was a rather significant and interesting series of events. Apparently, we had POGO, but because of our instrumentation limitations, weren't able to identify it after the first few flights. But we decided to use some special techniques on the data, and then we discovered that we did indeed have a POGO problem. And subsequent to that, we had to develop what were the physical laws or hypotheses that permitted us to explain why it happened, which then permitted us to identify the physical elements, you know, the hardware in the system that was involved, And then we were able to make analyses and perform tests to validate and support the analysis to tell us that the theory as applied was valid. And having established that, we were then able to proceed to identify how to fix it, which we then validated again with testing. And having done that, we then installed it on the flight vehicle, and it flew this last flight very successfully, eliminating the COBOL. Now that had quite a history.
It came out of the COBOL working group. Damn it, what was that in S1C stage first, or was the
best? I wouldn't say it came out of the POGO working group.
Okay.
The POGO working group was used as a consulting function.
Okay. Did you do most of the POGO problems internally?
I would say this
idea, you said that, you know, after the first few flights, you didn't see the problem, but yet you felt you had one, so you put special instrumentation aboard, and sure enough, you had it. It was dormant POGO.
Well, I think it was the third flight, it became quite large,
502,
so that it wasn't, 503. And so with the instrumentation we did have, the signature was there very vividly. But in going back and looking at the 501 and 502 data with new data analysis or assessment techniques, we were able to discover that it was also there. And prior to that, we hadn't recognized it because of our instrumentation limitations or our ability to interpret it, whichever way you want to look at it. Frankly, I think the POGO working group acted as a sanction and a consulting body. By sanction, I mean somebody that you could, or some group of people that were expert in the field, whom you could used to challenge whatever approach you had to see that you were really being objective, and not only objective, but also putting the proper weight on the importance of various parts of your analysis. But my personal opinion is that we did most of the work, and some of the experts in the labs at NASA made significant contributions. And the POGO working group itself, I think, acted as I say, consulting function, where there were experts from many companies and other centers that we could use to keep ourselves in balance in what we were doing. And I think they performed that function well. Now, I've deliberately avoided using any names with anybody.
I should have done that. I mean, you know,
I didn't know whether you wanted to get names of people in it or not, so I just left out names.
That's a typical North American. When you end up, it's all done by a bunch of faceless engineers, and as a historian, I always said we should try to correct it.
Yeah, well, that's my problem, too. I looked at the Martian stuff, and it said it was decided on the 14th of December, and it's all committee. Now, people did have an impact on that. It wasn't just built by a computer. It was built by people hammering out these decisions and these working panels and what have you. But Von Braun doesn't even stand out in Marshall. I think, it comes out in conversation. It doesn't come out from reading the documents.
Well, I think that you can pick out some people, but but I think you also have to recognize that the methodology used of challenging again and challenging again involves many people, because in order to make effective challenges, you can't always have the same people making the challenge at each step, because there's no formula for success yet, and if you consider that there's no formula, and it's difficult to predict the future precisely, you have to admit that people have to ask questions, and with enough questions you can, and logical approach and a rational approach, you can minimize the probability of missing anything significant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's okay right now. So how long are
we in that process, many, many people get involved, and mm-hmm. it's difficult to keep track of who asked the right question at which step of the way, or who answered the question mm-hmm. properly, right, or who thought of the right idea. Now, there are people that do stand out, as, in my mind, Bill Parker, Paul Wickham, Bob Greer, Harold Dale, Billy Zell. Dick Schwartz, Bob Westrup, Len Van Leuven,
mm-hmm.
You got to feel ashamed of myself for not remembering more.
Well, that's the beginning of the top bunch.
Roy Healy, who passed away,
mm-hmm.
Chuck Allen, and there was a fellow named Cox, who operated our Mississippi test site prior to Chuck Allen.
Did you have any comments on, when I asked you this before we got off on something, on what Von Braun's impact was in the program as far as you're concerned, or how he perceived things from Huntsville?
Well, as I said, my primary contact with him was through the presentations. I would have to just almost speculate, really, that his organization at Huntsville consisted of a program chain and a technical chain.
Mm-hmm.
And I always had the distinct impression that that was deliberate, an organization in order to provide a check and balance.
Mm-hmm.
I associated with that. That was Von Braun's method of operating.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's an attribute of him to see he's preserving the whole concept of check and balance, which I've mentioned before, describing it in other ways, of the challenge and then another challenge each step mm-hmm. of the way. He's preserved that in his organization of the center. His people had a great deal of respect for him, both as a technician and as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur Rudolph is another man that probably had more impact on me than any other individual, except possibly Bob Greer, on me personally.
Talk a little bit about the relationship with Dr.
Hill? Well, the thing that stands out in my mind is there are two events. One, when we first met, he met Harold Dale and I. We were coming back from lunch, and he made a comment which I'm going to have to paraphrase. I don't recall it. But it said, "You have the whole program in your hands, and in order for us to..." We were both engineering, and the implication was you engineering, and both of us being new. The success of the whole program is in your hands now. And apparently at that time we were a critical element in the success of getting a launch off on time. And so the national success or failure was in our hands. That's sort of a paraphrase of what he said. And he said it with such sincerity that I'd have to admit that that probably was the strongest single motivation that I got. It was essentially near the start of, or just after the start of my efforts on the Saturn. The second time was I gave him a briefing, if it was here at Downey. We're still at Downey. And after the briefing, he came over to me and he shook my hand and he said, thank you very much. And I asked him what he specifically meant, but it's rather unusual for someone to come over and shake my hands after I gave a briefing. And his comment was, well, there are very few briefings I get that I feel are straightforward, simply presented, that I can understand without reservation. And this was one. And so he congratulated me for it. And I thanked him very much. Bob Greer, his impact on me was that he gave me a full rein in doing what I thought was right. Simply presented, and I thought that was a challenge for me. Sam Yark. Have the paperwork at the exact place at the right time. Mm-hmm. And so you have to know the people who you're dealing with and have confidence that. I guess the essence of it, if you remember Sam Yarkin, I don't know if anybody's mentioned him, mm-hmm. Sam Yarkin and Roy Godfrey and Bill LaHat, John Stone. We all had very good business relations, developed confidence and rapport. And
very hard to try. That's very good. It's interesting to see how this kind of, you know, something has to hold this together besides the.
Yeah. And Hal Dale also had the same method of operation. Doing what I thought was right.